Deep in the Ouachita Mountains of western Arkansas, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the Guerrilla Media Network presents The Reynolds Reveal, the new weekly show that, no matter the limitations that may trammel inquiry elsewhere, sifts and winnows without fear or favor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today is Tuesday, February 26, 2013. This is episode number 3 of the Reynolds Reveal. I very much value you being part of the show, and yes, we do welcome your calls here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. Once again, I've been waiting all week for this new episode of the Reynolds Reveal. What fun and what an opportunity. Last week was quite a good show, I believe. Our main guest, Professor Tom DiLorenzo of Loyola College in Baltimore, Maryland, wielded his deep learning about Mr. Abraham Lincoln, and Tom destroyed the myth of Lincoln. And Lincoln is irreparably broken after our show. Tom DiLorenzo is the leading scholar on the lion, murdering, rail splitter. And Tom DiLorenzo wielded his sledgehammer facts and deep learning to deprogram anyone listening. And we decided during that broadcast that this news is confirmed. That is, today's statist lies are hardly different from Lincoln's lies 150 years ago. And it's important to get the truth about Lincoln, because his myth is at the heart of the gigantic growth of the monster we call the federal government. And today, I intend to destroy some of the mythology that surrounds 9/11, the big government scam whose evil consequences play out daily at home and around the world. My main guest today, I'll bring him on in segment 2, was an eyewitness to the events of 9/11 at the World Trade Center. Rob Salt is his name, and he will relay his experience on that horrible day and his thoughts and activities in the ensuing decade. But first, in this segment, before we go to 9/11, I want to consider these events. One is the sequestration debate. Let's look at that. That's in the news. And we've got next the testimony before the Senate Banking Committee today by one Ben Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve Bank. These two topics are pretty closely linked. So what's up with this sequestration business? The term sequestration is borrowed from the law, and that is the courts can sequester, is the term, property that's in dispute, whose ownership is in dispute. So the court would hold it as opposed to one of the two litigants until the court renders a decision. Now, This language sequestration's been transferred into the political arena here, the legislative and executive wrangling that's going on. And sequestration means a form of spending cutback that supposedly is automatic, and it's scheduled to come into play Friday, March 1. And where does this come from? Well, back in the summer of 2011, the Congress passed something called the Budget Control Act of 2011. and it was signed by President Barack Obama on August 2, 2011. And what this legislation would do would be to cut back on spending to match an overall cap on spending. So all these appropriation committees, you add it all up, and of course they outspend any notion of a cap. So it's an attempt. The way I put it is, it's like an alcoholic who says in summer of 2011, you know, I need to get my alcohol, my consumption of booze under control, and let's set it for March 1, 2013, as if that's not ever going to come around on the calendar. It's far off enough that I can continue to overspend or over imbibe. So all the parties agreed to it. Okay, you can say the Republican majority, in a sense, forced it because they had the lever of the debt ceiling. Said, well, we're not going to approve a debt ceiling unless we get some concession that will get spending under control, can start cutting back our deficits, and therefore our borrowing, spending money we don't have except to borrow more. So a lot of the screaming and moaning here, of course, is based on a Keynesian approach to the economy. Oh, my goodness, if we don't spend all that we've dialed in or planned on spending this year, we'll lose jobs. And I'm going to turn to the column by Paul Krugman, the notorious Nobel Prize winner in economic science in 2008. Of course, Alfred Nobel, the famous inventor of dynamite and who became a wealthy man, set up the Nobel Prizes. He didn't offer one for economic science. That wasn't part of the original deal. I believe it's around 1968, the Central Bank of Sweden set it up. So they're kind of piggybacking on the once prestigious Nobel Prize system, the much overvalued when it comes to economic science. Well, Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist, he's a professor of economics at Princeton University, as was Ben Bernanke on the faculty at Princeton in economics. Well, the column says everybody's to blame. And this is on the sequestration issue. And he starts off by saying, this is pretty amazing. He says, American voters made it clear that they want to preserve the social safety net while raising taxes on the rich. The famous fomenters of fiscal fear have moved to the right, calling for even less revenue and even more spending cuts. Well, this is an interesting statement, a judgment call about our democracy. It reminds me of H.L. Mencken, the sage of Baltimore, who said, and I paraphrase, democracy is the theory that the people ought to get what they want, good and hard. I don't think Krugman's a real fan of H.L. Mencken, but I am. Okay, Krugman goes on and says, but that legacy of that year, 2011, of living foolishly lives on in the form of the sequester, one of the worst policy ideas in our nation's history. I beg to differ. The government is drunk on spending. It's totally out of control. But that Krugman sees it differently, of course, because he is a follower of John Maynard Keynes, and that is in punk economic times, the government's supposed to spend us rich. That's the short of the Keynesian theory. Okay, Krugman says, here's how it happened. Republicans engaged in an unprecedented hostage-taking, threatening to push America into default by refusing to raise the debt ceiling. Well, we already covered that. The truth is that Republicans and Democrats alike signed on to this idea. That's right. But that's water under the bridge. The question we should be asking is, who has a better plan for dealing with the aftermath of that shared mistake? Of course, the mistake is, mentioned at the end, Krugman says, the sequester will probably cost around 700,000 jobs. But the looming mess remains a monument to the power of truly bad ideas. Oh, my goodness. Now, it is true that reduced spending in the immediate term may and likely would cost some jobs, some disemployment. But here's the big picture on the business cycle. These interventions, more government spending, more printing by the Federal Reserve, moderated the depth of the recession, but it's at the cost of extended duration. In other words, there's a trade-off here. If you allow a real recession, it can be over relatively quickly because markets and pricing and the like adjust quickly to the new reality, and we can thereby reestablish a foundation for sound economic growth, sustainable economic growth, without all this hand-holding and pumping. But what we've done then is continue to administer the booze that created the boom and the bubbles that went with it. And now even Bernanke and Krugman recognize we have a comparatively weak economy. And nobody, neither of those guys, thinks it can be sustained without more fiscal and monetary pumping. So let's turn to Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, who appeared before the Senate Banking Committee today. And according to the Bloomberg account I'm looking at, he defended the central bank's unprecedented asset purchases. Surprise, surprise. So he's defending his printing of our funny money. He says that they support the expansion with little risk of inflation or asset price bubbles. Well, strictly speaking, printing money is inflation. And quite often it's associated with price inflation. And surely it's associated with asset price inflation or bubbles. So Bernanke is saying everything is fine, sort of. To quote Bernanke, quote, we do not see the potential costs of the increased risk-taking in some financial markets as outweighing the benefits of promoting a stronger economic recovery, unquote. And he continues, inflation is currently subdued and inflation expectations appear well anchored, unquote. Well, of course, there was debate among the board at the Fed in their meeting toward the end of January last month about that. If inflation expectations get away on us, we're going to actually have price inflation. All this money is going to spill over from the financial sector where it largely resides into the economy in general. Oh, now here. This next statement by Bernanke shows you how two-faced he is and all the official liars are. Bloomberg writes, automatic federal budget cuts set to begin March 1 will put a, quote, significant burden on the economy if lawmakers can't avert the reduction, Bernanke told lawmakers in the first day of his semi-annual monetary policy report. So he urged lawmakers to put the budget on a sustainable long-run path. That sustainable long-run path is Bernanke's quote. Well, this is very much like Krugman. If only we, by our fiscal and monetary interventionism, can get a sustainable economic growth going, then we could somehow reduce or eliminate deficits. Or maybe even run a surplus to pay down some of the public debt on net. So, yes, I want to back off the booze, but tomorrow, mañana. Isn't this the way they do it further south? Mañana. Okay, Bernanke, age 59, repeated prior Fed statements that the asset purchases will continue unless the labor market outlook shows, quote, substantial improvement, unquote, from current levels. He described the job market as being, quote, generally weak, unquote. Well, how much time does he need for this therapy to work? he's been pumping it out huge since the end of 08. Of course, all the bailouts, the big, the trillions in money and loans, the low interest loans and guarantees, etc. So that was 4 years ago plus and counting. And still the therapy hasn't cured the patient. Going back to Bloomberg's account of Bernanke's testimony today, in exchange with senators during a Q&A period, Bernanke denied that the Fed is engaging in a currency war, though through its asset purchases, and responded to a suggestion that he is a dove who favors easy policy, easy money and credit. They don't come any dovier than Ben Bernanke. Well, Bernanke says Fed policies are, quote, increasing demand globally and helping not only our businesses, but the businesses in other countries that export to us. This is not a beggar thy neighbor policy, unquote. I beg to differ. These central bankers and economists and financiers and all the financially alert are looking at this and saying, you know, every paper money currency and its managers at the central bank are looking at lower value. They like a cheaper currency in the belief that it will help exporters. And in the short run, yes, it does. But is a cheap currency, a debased and depreciating money, good financial and monetary policy overall? No. So you've got the euro managers don't want the euro to be strong relative to the dollar. Japan, of course, is screaming bloody murder. We got to get the value of this money down. So it is one unholy mess. And we need to go back, if you really want to know the history, back to 1913, who created the Fed and what it's all about. And I don't have time for that. But we have a break coming up, and I'm going to bring on my guest. We're going to change topics, go to 9/11 and get an eyewitness testimony to find out what happened at the World Trade Center. So come on back to the Reynolds Reveal.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out your credit card debt, stop harassing telephone calls, even stop foreclosure and repossession? I'm talking about Chapter 7 of the Federal Bankruptcy Code. Federal bankruptcy laws were designed to get the creditors off your back and give you a fresh start. Imagine waking up one morning without stressing about debt. It's true, and it could be you. Call right now at 800-281-2286 to see if you qualify for this powerful debt relief program. We're the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. Craig has been a practicing attorney for 17 years and has an A+ Better Business rating. We know how to make the law work for you to give you a fresh start. We provide a free initial confidential consultation. Don't spend another day wondering what to do about your debt. Call 800-281-2286. The consultation is free and so is your phone call. You have nothing to lose but your debt, so call now at 800-281-2286. That's 800-281-2286. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guest when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Reveal. Yours truly is the host, Morgan Reynolds, and that REM, Losing Your Religion, gives me goosebumps. It's just a great song, great group. In this segment, we are going to discuss 9/11 and 9/11 planes, and no planes will come up. And I think it's important to review why this issue is so important. It's been the research has been controversial. There's pluses and minuses, and people get terribly worked up. And if you're going to get worked up about any public issue, this is a very important aspect of understanding and furthering our understanding of 9/11. Let's take a look at the case that the U.S. government makes and its corporate stenographers. The whole argument is that Muslim hijackers took over four airliners. These hijackers were able to do this, apparently, and they're directed by a guy in a cave in Afghanistan, and they defeated the entire U.S. air defense and crashed these airliners in the four designated sites, two at the World Trade Center, one at the Pentagon, and one near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Now, that's the whole premise for who knows how many deaths. Clearly, to me, the data support a seven-figure number, over a million. And all the restrictions that have come with our civil liberties, etc. Now, to show you how this rush to judgment was made and how much the proof is faulty or wholly lacking, I recall when the alleged second hit on the South Tower occurred and the Fox anchor, I showed this clip in my talk in Madison, Wisconsin at a 9/11 conference in 2007. The anchor identified the culprit as Osama bin Laden within 45 seconds of the South Tower hit. Now, to put this in sharp relief, how long did it take the FBI to figure out who the Unabomber was in the biggest manhunt in the history of the of law enforcement, no doubt? 17 years it took them. Well, how did they catch the Unabomber? Because his brother gave him up, gave up the info, walked into the FBI or called them and said, I got important information for you about the Unabomber. So this is how credulity stretching this whole thing is. Now, we're all well aware of the consequences of 9/11. And hey, if the whole thing is false, then all of this suffering and needless restrictions of our liberties, the destruction of America, in effect, is all the more lamentable, sad, unnecessary, and it makes it a guy like me, who's a happy guy, even depressed. So we need to learn more and spread the truth and throw off these falsehoods. And in this effort, I bring aboard my guest, a man that I'm going to learn something about, named Rob Salt, who was an eyewitness to some of the events, some of the early parts, certainly, of the 9/11 at the World Trade Center. But Rob, are you there?
Yes, Morgan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. Now, I don't know that much about Rob, but I'm going to ask him to give us a biography. I first met him, you could say, through his contributions to my website or blog, nomoregames.net. And I was very impressed with the observations. And here's a guy who could really think and write and make useful statements, and said, well, I'm an eyewitness to the early stages of 9/11 at the World Trade Center. So, Rob, are you a native New Yorker?
Yes, my full name is Robert Edward Salt. I was born on Staten Island. I lived here all my life. I'll be 70 years old this year. I attended.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, that's a milestone right there. I attended Wagner College here on Staten Island, and I received a bachelor's degree in mathematics. Wernher von Braun spoke at my graduation in 1965.
Oh, now there's an interesting connection. Yes.
Yes. 6 months later, I was drafted. I spent 2 years in the Army, including a year in Vietnam. As soon as I was discharged, I took a job with Blue Cross and worked at several locations in Manhattan, including 2.5 years at the World Trade Center. And I worked in the North Building, the North Tower, on the north side of the North Tower, on the 27th floor.
So you worked your whole post-NAM career with Blue Cross, right?
Yeah, that's correct, as a computer programmer.
Huh, okay. All right. Now this isn't directly relevant, but did your parents were native New Yorkers as well?
My mother was born here on Staten Island, and my father was born somewhere in New York City, I think Brooklyn or Queens.
Hey, deep roots. I think it matters in terms of who you are culturally and kind of the valuation. I had an article on nomoregames.net about that mid-air collision over New York City in 1960.
Yes,
and
I remember that.
Yeah, Rob chimed in about, tell us about that, your personal experience of that event.
I don't know an awful lot about it. I was in high school then. I graduated from high school in 61. And, yeah, two planes collided right around where the Verrazano was being built. And I think one plane landed on Staten Island, and the other one crashed on Staten Island. The other one crashed in Brooklyn, I believe.
Yes, that's how I recall it too. Well, there's some amazing photos from that time. But didn't you say that one aircraft landed like in a National Guard area, relatively unpopulated, and no one on the ground was hurt by that debris?
Yeah, I think it was at Miller Field. I think it was Miller Field. Yeah, I think so. That's where the kids play soccer all the time, and they have softball fields there now.
Yeah, I put that up because it shows it's one piece of evidence about what a plane crash really looks like.
Right.
Okay, well, let's go to that fateful morning. What time did you how did you get to work, and what time did you show up on 9/11?
Well, in nice weather, I walk to the ferry about 2 miles from my home to Staten Island Ferry. Then I take the ferry across, and I walk a half mile up to the buildings. Well, I got to work about 8:30 that morning, and about 8:45, there was a loud boom, and with it, the building swayed to the south. It almost felt like the building was about to topple. And most people weren't in yet. There were just three of us in the area working on our computers. There was Sophie to my right, a cubicle to my right, and the cubicle behind her was Ernie. And the three of us just looked at each other, and Ernie says, "I think a plane might have hit the building." And Sophie looked me in the eyes, and she says, "Do you think it was an earthquake?" And I said, "No, I think Ernie's probably right. It probably a plane hit the building." And right after that, we had a snowfall of paper, 8x11 papers outside the building. I could stand up in my cubicle and see out all of the northern windows along the side. I could also see out the eastern and western windows near the corners, because there was no obstructions on the floor except for the inner core itself. So this was a very gentle snowfall of paper, and it lasted the whole time we stayed there, about 20 minutes.
Conference.
Rob, if I might ask a question then.
Yes.
You said it sounded like one boom, but...
Yeah, but it had an echo-like effect, because there were two explosions, one above, which cut a hole in the upper floors in the shape of an airplane, and a huge explosion in the basement. And I for years, I didn't know what the purpose of that explosion was. And that explosion was to tip the building and give it a sway.
So you were had the distinct impression or perception that there was a big boom explosion that went off in the sub basements, perhaps below you, at any rate, and one way up in the building.
Yes, there definitely was an explosion in the basement, because when we left, we went down the stairwells, and in the lower floors, like the four lower floors, the stairs were all wet, and it was because the sprinklers went off on those floors. And the lobby was a wreck, and they routed us out through the mall because of the jumpers, which I didn't even know about at that time. And the ceiling was down in the mall, and they had emergency lighting running, a string of lighting running across the mall as we went
out. So you, in the Naudé film, they show the damage in the lobby of the North Tower. I think it was the North Tower. There's a lot of marble.
Yeah, it was the North
facing.
Tower.
It was the North Tower.
They also said there were two bodies on fire there, too. But they didn't show that in the film. They didn't want to show that.
Okay, that's what other witnesses said, maybe the Naudé brothers included,
yeah.
Huh? Okay, so you saw some of the damage in the mall.
Yes.
And what is it, light, medium, or heavy? Would you?
It was light. It was just, you know, the ceiling, not the heavy stuff, just the light stuff that you would see. Mm-hmm. Was down.
So in terms of Dr. Judy Wood's book, when she shows you the Warner Brothers store and the intact figures from the Warner Brothers cartoons, you know, Bugs Bunny or whoever, it's that would be quite credible that there was light damage in the mall.
Yes. All the stores, I believe, had light damage.
Okay, so, you know, this is between 8:45 and 9 a.m., right?
In that. Yeah, I think we left the floor around 5 after 9.
Each oh,
floor
really?
Has, yeah. There were no announcements, no, there was nothing to tell us that anything was going wrong except for the snowfall of paper outside.
So, the second event, the South Tower hit, which was at 9:03, had happened right around the time you are evacuating the building.
Apparently, we didn't even know about it. In fact, when I got up on the street, I was about 50 yards away from the buildings, and I was looking at the east side of the buildings, and I knew our building had a problem, but I was surprised to see that the South Tower had a similar problem.
Did you notice the smoke coming out of the South Tower separately?
Yeah.
Yes?
I stood there about 30 seconds and evaluated it. I gave it a good hard look, and I could see four floors were heavily damaged on both buildings, and I could see flames flicker on two of the floors in each of the buildings. And when you look at the news report of the South Tower being hit, most of the damage was on the east side of the building. So it looked to me, it wasn't an inferno. It looked to me like the firefighters had it under control and it was just about out. And there was black smoke coming up from both buildings.
That reminds me of Captain Oreo Palmer, I believe was his name. He radioed down. He got up to the 76th floor, I believe, as I recall, in the South Tower. And he said there were, in layman's terms, that there were basically two patches of fire, and you get two lines up here, and we can put it out. So that, and then he died within minutes of that because the South Tower was turned to dust, basically.
Yeah.
So that's consistent with what your impression was about, we'll call it a moderate rather than a raging inferno. It was very extensive fire coverage.
My house is back-to-back with a firefighter who lost his life in the South Tower and left behind a wife and three children.
Yeah, it's heartrending. It's awful. So you were there, you're doing your 30-second look, and then what happens next?
Well, then I decided I said to myself, there's no way they're going to let us back in the building today. In fact, I didn't believe they would let us back in the building the rest of the week. So I decided to get out of the way and go home and tell my daughter, who was in the eighth grade, that I'm all right. So I looked to the south because that's the way I would go to the ferry to go home. And there were emergency vehicles there and a big crowd there. So rather than confront that, I walked east till I got away from the madness. And then I walked south. I wound up walking down Broad Street to the ferry. And I got to the ferry, I guess, about 10 to 10. And I was waiting there outside the ferry terminal with about a couple dozen other people. The ferry was, the 10 o'clock ferry was about 5 minutes late. And 10 o'clock, some guy shows up and says, the South Tower has collapsed. Now, Morgan, if you're out playing tennis someplace and it happens to be a building half mile away, 110 stories high, and that building collapses, you would expect to hear something, right? Like a thunder.
I sure would. Yeah. Screeching steel and enormous shaking of the earth, I would expect.
Right. Well, we never heard a thing. So I'm thinking, this guy has a sick sense of humor. But he was serious, and people were taking him seriously. So also, if a building collapsed a half mile from you, what do you expect to see? You would expect to see like a grayish-white cloud of dust where the building was?
Yes, yeah, and not far above kind of the debris height, you know, like the Kingdome.
Right, and you wouldn't expect it to move, to travel like a half mile or even
it would
not
settle
even a quarter of a mile, right? Well, we couldn't see the towers from the ferry because of close-up buildings to us.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple minutes later, the ferry pulls in. We get aboard the ferry. As soon as we get aboard the ferry, before the ferry even pulls out, a thick black cloud of dust engulfs the ferry. Couldn't see anything. Mm. I don't know how the captain could even maneuver the boat from there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a five-mile trip to Staten Island. And the first mile of the trip, the ferry passes along the coast of Governor's Island. And I'm looking out the port side of the boat to see if I can see Governor's Island, because I want to know when we pull out of this cloud. And I'm watching and watching. And finally, we abruptly pull out of this cloud of dust at the southern tip of Governor's Island. This is about a mile and a half away from the Trade Center, which means this cloud of dust is 3 miles thick, right?
Yes.
So I didn't know it at the time, but I had just sailed through the remains of the South Tower, as well as the employees who were in it and the fire.
Right, that was the South Tower you were
that
breathing.
That was the South Tower I sailed through. So I get to Staten Island around 10:30. I get off the boat. I start walking home along the north shore of Staten Island, and I look 5 miles away to Manhattan, and I see this the black cloud of dust. It extends from Jersey City all the way to Brooklyn, and it's about two-thirds the height of the towers. So I'm worried about the North Tower, and I'm trying to look to see if I can see it. But above the cloud of dust, it's hazy and smoky, and I don't see it, but I can't be sure it's not there. And I found out later it was gone already.
Yeah, that was a 10:28 and 31 seconds, more or less, 10:28.
Right.
So that's consistent with what you're saying about your arrival there near Staten Island.
So then I picked up my daughter. I went home and I watched TV all afternoon to find out what's going on. And I can't believe my eyes late that afternoon when I see Building 7 go down. Why did it go down? I don't understand that. There were so many things I couldn't understand. And for 2.5 years, I was trying to piece it all together. Nothing made any sense, including the Shanksville crash. They showed a picture of it, and there was nothing there but a smoldering hole, and it was all taped off so reporters and photographers couldn't get near it.
Yeah, that's one of the things about all four events is we have the four cleanest crash sites in aviation history.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's amazing. I believe we're near a break, but we certainly are in some deep muddy here where, as you say, Rob Salt, I couldn't figure out what happened or what was going on. And isn't that in greater New York City, isn't that still a common reaction or not?
I don't know. People don't talk about it that much. They want to get beyond it, you know. And it just can't be done. It has to be dealt with.
Yes, it has to be. It's like the JFK assassination. There's something terribly wrong with the conventional story, and you know, there's nothing here to see anymore. Just move on. That is so wrong, and we keep on that behavior just allows it these bigger events to occur. You're listening to the Reynolds Reveal, interviewing Rob Salt on 9/11. Let's resume that after the break.
Monopoly 21, checkers and chess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Fred Lassie in a breakfast mess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's play.
Mamma Mia is authentic Italian cookie company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guest when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Hi folks, Pete Santilli here. As a prominent social media personality on Facebook and Twitter since they were first launched, I participated in one-dimensional discussions with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. When I first set up my SecondLife.com account about a year ago, I entered a whole new magical world that brought my social media activity to life. Second Life is much more than just a 3D game or a social media platform. It'll bring your online persona to life in one of the most beautiful virtual reality simulators on the internet. It's free, and besides, it's the best way to listen to the Pete Santilli Show. You can interact with me live as I broadcast daily from the Overthrow Bunker studio. To get your free account, go to any one of our episodes and click on the Second Life banner. Once you're in, we'll give you the grand tour of our newly built Camp FEMA, the very first educational tool of its kind anywhere in the world. For a limited time, if you sign up for a new SecondLife.com account, we'll give you a priceless welcome package. SecondLife.com. Join now, tune in, and connect with your friends at the Pete Santilli Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only 3 ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at FutureSmokes.com today. That's www.FutureSmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I am your host, Morgan Reynolds. We are having a conversation with Rob Salt, who was at the World Trade Center that fateful morning, 9/11. We welcome callers here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. Rob, what more do we need to know that you experienced that morning? Because we're probably ready to go on and be more reflective in what you've learned subsequently, how you've tried to cope with this and figure out what happened. So what is there anything we're missing in your experience that morning?
No, there's not much more I could say except a trip down on the stairwells, but there's not a whole lot to that either.
Let me ask a question then, because there's a group that argues that the towers were hollowed out.
Oh,
and I was wondering what you noticed about occupancy and the numbers of people, how many were evacuated, or, you know, was it busy or not? Is there anything to that view?
I don't understand.
Okay. Were there a lot of vacancies, empty space in
the towers?
Yes.
I understand there was for many years. I believe it was pretty well filled up, though, by the time it was destroyed. But I don't think it was a moneymaker all those years, because they had to have low rent to get people in them.
So yes.
That was one of the reasons.
It was kind of a white elephant.
Yeah, that's why it made a good target. And it was nice and big. And they
now, what about the kind of daily life there? Because law enforcement had to deal with these threats almost daily. We had the 93 bombing. Was there?
Did you know today is the 20th anniversary of the 93 bombing?
Today is.
Today is.
How about that? Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know much about the security. I understand a Bush brother was involved with the security for and a cousin.
Yes, there's that may be one of those breadcrumbs or cookie. I'm not sure. You know, Easter egg planted and such. But
anyway,
you weren't there in '93, right? You were working in the World Trade Center for 2.5 years, right?
Yeah, I remember people coming out on the news with their faces covered with handkerchiefs and the faces all black from soot and everything.
Now, was it a chalky dust? Was it choking? Was it irritating to your skin or eyes?
Well, I didn't experience any of that. I was on the ferry before that. The black cloud of dust engulfed the boat. So
you were inside the...
I was inside the ferry. Yeah. And the ferry was more crowded than usual. There were people on the boat who didn't want to go to Staten Island, but they just wanted to get away from Manhattan. And you couldn't blame them because ferries weren't running, the buses weren't running, and the bridges were tied up. My wife was working in Brooklyn that day, and she didn't get home till after 10 p.m. that night.
Okay, because of impaired public transportation.
Right. I was lucky. I was home before noon with my daughter.
Now, you're a Vietnam veteran. Did you see combat, or were you in dangerous areas at all?
No, I was lucky. I got good duty. I got ship-to-shore operations in Quinyan Harbor. And that was really nice duty. I enjoyed that.
Did you feel personally at risk, as you said, it was kind of an orderly evacuation?
Yes, it was very quiet and orderly. It was single file going down the stairs, and it was stop and go because the lower floors were coming out into the stairwells. And when we first started down, we went down three floors. We came to a locked door. We had to go back up to the next floor and find another stairwell, which did go all the way down. And there was a single file of young firefighters coming up on the other side of the stairwell. And the center was kept open, and every once in a while, a firefighter would bring down a burn victim, escort them down. They'd be walking, but he'd escort them down.
I mean, the people that were worst off would be people above the hit area in both towers.
Yes,
right?
Right, yeah.
Many or most, aside from first responders, escaped, I imagine. Is that your impression?
Yeah, that was my impression.
Well, let's go to your views on whether an airplane or an airliner hit the North Tower. It was interesting that your fellow employee, Ernie, identified it as a plane.
Yes.
Might have hit the building, I believe were your words, right? It's an interesting observation.
He said later on he thought it was a much smaller plane, though, because we never heard a plane coming towards the building, you know. And these jetliners, I've been to Little League games near Kennedy Airport, and these jetliners, they are deafening, and everything around you will vibrate, like the fences and poles and everything. And it was totally quiet before the boom. And the boom.
Right. So that suggests, hey, wait a minute. It may not have been a plane.
Yeah. But it took a long time before I realized it wasn't. In fact, I read Dr. Wood's book before I even knew there was no plane. I looked at Andrew Johnson's site, you know, checktheevidence.com.
Yeah.
He had a nice big photo of the hole in the North Tower. And he said, I don't see a plane in there. Do you? And you look in there, and all you could see was the north side of the inner core. There was no wreckage, no plane, no nothing in there. And then I
thought that's an important observation.
Yeah.
People refer to that B-25 bomber hitting the Empire State Building in 1955 in the fog. The plane was probably going a little over 200 miles an hour, and there were big parts of the plane hanging out.
Yeah, I had a grade school teacher who was in the Empire State Building working that day when it got hit.
Oh, really? Is there more to that story?
I don't know. She just mentioned that when I had her as a teacher.
Yeah. But if you look at the forensic evidence, you've got to do more on the forensic evidence. And we will be back with more of the Reynolds Reveal on the other side of the break with our guest, Rob Stahl, eyewitness to 9/11.
Just the basic facts. Can you show me where it hurts? There is no pain you are receiving. A distant ship's smoke on the horizon. You are only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you say.
This broadcast has been brought to you by the Gorilla Media Network.
Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out your credit card debt? Stop harassing telephone calls? Even stop foreclosure and repossession? I'm talking about Chapter 7 of the Federal Bankruptcy Code. Federal bankruptcy laws were designed to get the creditors off your back and give you a fresh start. Imagine waking up one morning without stressing about debt. It's true, and it could be you. Call right now at 800-281-2286 to see if you qualify for this powerful debt relief program. We're the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. Craig has been a practicing attorney for 17 years and has an A+ Better Business rating. We know how to make the law work for you to give you a fresh start. We provide a free initial confidential consultation. Don't spend another day wondering what to do about your debt. Call 800-281-2286. The consultation is free, and so is your phone call. You have nothing to lose but your debt, so call now at 800-281-2286. That's 800-281-2286. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only 3 ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
One great thing about having Barnes & Noble as a sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show is that we love Barnes & Noble. If you visit thepetesantillishow.com, you'll see several ads displaying the new Note color for the very special price of $169. If you've noticed the latest craze in ebooks, Everyone's carrying their favorite brand and immersed in the Internet's newest revolutionary technology, the tablet e-reader. The Pete Santilli Show is proud to offer our listeners the new Nook, and we're also excited to offer what some are calling the best in the tablet world. What's more is that the new Nook Simple Touch, Simple Touch Glow Light, Nook Color, and Nook Tablet range in the price of $199 to as little as $99. The Nook Tablet Reader from BarnesandNoble.com. Portable and definitely affordable. Visit the PeteSantilliShow.com today and click on any of the Barnes & Noble ads to find the Nook that's right for you.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Reynolds Reveal. We're back. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we're interviewing Rob Salt, an eyewitness to 9/11. We welcome callers here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number is 218-862-9829, and we have Nemo on line one. Nemo, are you there? Nemo, you got a question, comment?
By pressing star six.
Hi, how you doing?
Nemo, go ahead.
Yeah, I was on the listen line, but I was actually listening to the caller on 9/11. And, I was living in that neighborhood of the World Trade Center when it got bombed. And, it's a crazy sight to have been seen. And I actually was underneath the World Trade Center the morning it happened, 7 a.m. I was going down to Jersey, so I was taking the path, and it's a crazy memory of mine. But
are you talking about the 20 years ago, the bombing in '93, and then you switched to the 9/11?
Pardon me.
Are you talking about 9/11, or are you talking about the
9/11? I was underneath the World Trade Center, taking a PATH train in New Jersey.
It okay.
Happened, about 9 a.m. I was there 7 a.m. underneath it. And, I lived in the neighborhood, and I would always walk around and see the World Trade Center and just look at it. And just the size of the buildings, like almost no explosives can blow it up because it's so big. Each building is so wide that it's almost impossible to have blown up. So right when that tower fell down, I almost was at the same point, like, how could that have happened? And it doesn't make sense.
Okay, we've got a thank you there, Nemo. And we've got another caller in the 518 area code, Albany. Go ahead,
yes,
caller.
Okay, Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Salt, I'll tell you, your guest is the most credible witness I've heard to date. Seriously, I can tell he's speaking the truth. Now, he said that he heard an explosion downstairs. I know William Rodriguez said he heard that, too. Now, are you guys saying that there were explosives there, or what do you say caused that explosion?
Rob?
There must have been explosions in the basement. And apparently there were explosions in the upper floor to carve the shape of an airplane in the side of the building. I don't know anything about explosives, but it must have been specialized energy theory,
correct? You know.
But Rob, you're saying I believe that they were internally placed, which is a proposition, of course, that has certain problems associated with it.
But. I'm saying that there were explosives there. If you could destroy the building, and I'm open to all the theories right now. If it could do that, why would they need explosives down the bottom? If you could just disagree, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I couldn't understand that myself for a long time. And finally, when I realized there were no planes, I figured the explosion in the building was to tip the building. The building felt like it was going to topple.
People in there, like you assume, that something came and rocked it.
Yeah. The explosion in the
building could have been hit by a plane.
But remember, of course, all explosions don't come from bombs. My favorite example is the internal combustion engine. But there were tanks, including water tanks, under pressure, and perhaps they were – pressure went up or the containers weakened, and you can get once the authorities were there really enforced, we had all these Scott air packs that the firefighters wear. They were blowing up spontaneously, we'll say. Right.
Now, I got another question, if I may, and I'm not trying to be the devil's advocate here, but, I think that she's got a good theory, because I saw them go up, and, they just kind of disappeared. They went pretty quick. And you said it tilted the building.
I said what?
Did you say that when it rocked, it tipped the building?
The building felt like it was about to topple, like it took a really hard hit from the north side.
Okay, that could have been the same time, obviously, William Rodriguez was hearing his
the
explosions that he claimed he heard.
That's right. I think you
there, there have a problem
it.
With Willie Rodriguez's testimony in that there's no corroborating facts that I've ever come across for his testimony. And
I know they gave him an award, Bush congratulated him. And then when he started trying to divulge things, different than the, quote, official story, they kind of dumped him and pushed him aside and just ignored him.
Yeah. Well, what's her name? April Gallup in the Pentagon, she had a similar story. She said nothing just
that. She walked through
Pentagon.
The hallway. She said she didn't see any plane. Now, and I suppose they lost the three, was there four? I guess there were four supposedly black boxes that they lost at the Trade Center.
Yeah, but there were no planes. That's the problem.
Well, there's never been any official recognition that there were black boxes recovered at the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But Jesse Ventura, he had a guy on said in 47 years they never lost one. And he said they claimed they lost four that day. And now he had a guy on his show, if you recall, who supposedly was working down there. And the guy became public, and he said that one of his buddies found one, okay, and the FBI came and took it away, and, they just denied having them. So you guys think that there were no planes that hit it also, right? Now,
let's go back to that. If you're going to argue, as the government does, that there were 767s that crashed into the Twin Towers, you got a problem, lots of problems forensically in that. For example, there's no substantial debris. There were no... You look at all the pictures of the holes in the towers, there's no aircraft parts. There's no large tail sections which would have snapped off, et cetera. There's no aircraft debris below the hole.
You're familiar with Michael Rivero, right?
Michael Rivero? Yeah, I know who he is.
He's a talk show host. He's got a pretty good following in the alternative. But he claims, that a plane hit the Pentagon. Okay, and he claims that it was vaporized. Now, I just can't buy that.
That's ridiculous. That's some of these government officials.
They're not just going to disappear. We got to be real here.
You can go.
A second forensic problem here is you have an immaculate penetration, I call it, if you look at the videos. In other words, the plane image goes into the building and disappears as if it's landing in a hangar. And the you know the videos show
I never really gave this a lot of thought, but you know the more you know I listen to you guys, the more sense it does make. And you know I mean you know that you, like you know Mr. Salt was saying, you know, he probably actually went through literally through the remains of you know the South Tower. I mean, you know, and that thing lingered for days and days, you know, and they told people, oh, it's okay, you know, go on out, you know, no problems, you know. And Guglielmini, I'll tell you, he is the worst.
I need your first name anyway, and we need to wrap this up so we can move on to other callers.
It's Frank anyway, and I'll let you guys go, and I think you're doing a great job, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your call.
I know.
Okay, Rob, just to maybe finish this segment, it's also suspicious that we have this roadrunner shape of an airplane outline, which just doesn't seem like that's the way collision physics work. And then you have the whole issue of the impossible speeds that are put out there, right? The Transportation Safety Board says that the South Tower plane was flying at 510 knots near sea level. 510 knots, that's 589 miles per hour, which is impossible. It's outside the performance parameters of a Boeing 767. Have you looked at any of that issue?
I know John Lear said it's absolutely impossible. He couldn't have done it.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's another thing. At that speed, you couldn't hit a tower.
Right.
People have tried that on simulators, and you cannot hit the tower. Yeah. I don't know how fast you've – the fastest I've ever been on my motorcycle is 140 miles an hour. And yeah. I can – you know, things are happening fast. You got to make rapid decisions, and they better be good.
Yeah.
And then you think about race cars, 200 miles an hour – I mean, 500-plus miles an hour near sea level, there's without markers, you know, to hit markers and track that thing, there's no way you can hit this building. It's, what, 204 feet wide or square, really? Yeah. So there's all kinds of problems. Now, the eyewitness testimony is mixed, and you can't help us on the eyewitness testimony, but most people didn't hear this kamikaze aircraft, but some have seen some things that I credit. One of them was an NYPD helicopter guy, and he claimed it was like an evil magician's trick, what he saw at the South Tower. I kind of credit that testimony.
Yeah. Well, we know they have all kinds of advanced technology that we don't know about. That's where all of the tax money and illegal drug money is going. Had to be going someplace. We know from the free energy weapon they had advanced technology.
Yeah, that we didn't know about, right?
Right.
It's like Hiroshima, right? All of a sudden, this new technology destroys a whole city.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Where do you believe that Dr. Wood is right that this is evidence that a free energy technology to turn these massive buildings to fine powder.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody who reads that book who is halfway intelligent is convinced. I mean, you just can't argue. That's why it's not allowed in court, because it's proof.
It would lead to the reset button, wouldn't it? In other words, it would put up for reexamination our entire framework and the people who run this system. We'll call it the power elite, both in government and outside.
That's right.
It's a scary thing. I'm not a very scared person, but it's just very scary.
Yeah, and people would just like to put it behind them, and it just can't do it. It's like having cancer. You can't ignore it.
Listen to this. There's a famous guy in the Harley T-shirt. You might have heard this. I'm going to play this for you. It's only a few seconds, less than 30 seconds, and get your comment about this guy, okay?
Okay.
Let's see if that's a...
Oh, we're not getting any audio.
No, oh, sorry. Sorry. I'm playing a YouTube of Mark Humphrey, who's an actor. And what he does is explain in under 60 seconds the entire government theory.
What's the name of the video?
Okay, it's on YouTube. It's called Full 911 Harley Shirt Guy Scene. Actor Mark Humphrey is Fox Freelancer. Yeah, so, you know, Full 911 Harley Shirt Guy will get it there. Can you play it,
Rick Pete? Leventhal was in downtown Manhattan when the buildings came down and has an updated update for us from Lower Manhattan. Rick?
Well, John, yeah. we're on Church Street at Reed Street, for those of you familiar with those.
Say again?
It'll show up. We'll play the whole thing here. Go ahead.
Just a few blocks away from World Trade, still thick black smoke billowing from the scene where both towers collapsed. Again, just a few blocks away from us. We were standing out here on Church Street when both towers came tumbling down, and each time there was a huge cloud of smoke and debris that came roaring down this street, and everyone literally ran for their lives. At this point, the police have been efforting to establish a perimeter. They're trying to keep people back and make sure that no one gets interferes with their job, which is to try and secure the area and then get inside that World Trade Center rubble to see whether or not they can locate any survivors who may have been inside the building or just outside the building when it came tumbling down. We want to bring in Mark Walsh, who's a freelancer for Fox. You live just a few blocks away and witnessed.
Dude, I live on the 43rd floor of a building, which is five blocks from the World Trade Center itself. I witnessed the entire thing from beginning to end.
People talking about how it looked like a movie. I know when I came walking down here early this morning and saw both towers on fire and people on every street corner, it was like a movie. But you watched the planes hit the towers.
I was watching with my roommate. It was approximately several minutes after the first plane had hit. I saw this plane come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Obviously, there were a lot of people inside the buildings at the time.
Okay, that's all we need, Pete. Okay, Rob, did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that wonderful how he summed up the whole government story there?
Yeah.
And it turns out he is an actor. He was introduced by a Fox correspondent as a Fox freelancer. Yeah. But he's an actor named Mark Humphrey.
Yeah. I'm sure they had plenty of fake witnesses planted there.
Yeah, I once made the comment online that you got to be a little more careful in New York City than in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, perhaps, because there's a lot of actors around there, aren't there? Yeah. Not too many in Shanksville. Well, here we are on the Reynolds Revealed, and we're talking with an eyewitness to 9/11 working at World Trade Center that day, Rob Salt.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal.
I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. We welcome callers at the Guerrilla Media Network, and the number is 218-862-9829. Once again, 218-862-9829. We bid adieu to our guest on the previous segment, Rob Salt, who gave his experience on the morning of 9/11 and his subsequent work on what did happen. Let's figure out what happened. And now we've got another eyewitness we want to talk to, good old Tommy Trainwreck, who doesn't think we've got everything exactly right. That's what I heard over the break. And Tommy, Why don't you pick up at the beginning on the – well, you can even go back to 1993 if you like. You've got a lot of experience down there with bombings and what your experience was on 9/11. So you start – pick your starting point.
This is going back in 93. Like, I'm not – you know, back in those days, there's no real – fans of conspiracy theories and all that. I mean, most of the time on Wall Street, anybody talk crazy stuff, you said they were just nuts. And, you know, you did your thing and they do their thing, whatever, right? But when I look back on it, like, some of the things that happened are pretty wild. In 93, when the bomb blew up in the Vista Hotel, the floor was in 7 World Trade Center, which was right above the garage. You remember that, right?
Okay. Right? I know it was a garage, but
at the time, there was 2 things going on. Whatever they were doing there, okay, but there was also an FBI investigation on the floor at the same time. And this is kind of coincidence, or maybe not, but I think one arm didn't even know the other arm was there. And I don't know who the other arm was, but when that bomb went off, I was outside the pit on the phone, and I probably went off the floor about 3 inches. And I turn around. And this guy who had been there only for about maybe a year, and he was kind of really rough looking dude. Like, you could tell from his hands and his face that, and his haircut, that he just didn't grow up where we grew up. Like, there was something seriously Navy SEAL-y about him, you know? And it turned out the company that he was working for was notorious for having these type of operatives working for them. And I know for a fact that they all were there, because I just take my word for it. I was interviewed by all of them, so I know who they all were.
So, what building were you in, Tommy?
7 World Trade Center.
Okay. Got it.
Not 7, 4. 4 World Trade Center.
You were in 4. Okay. That's what is that?
That was right on.
It's a 9-story building.
Mm-hmm.
WTC 4.
Yeah, if it was, I don't remember how many stories it was.
Yeah, it's 9.
All right, but it was at the southernmost building. Anyhow, when that happened, that building actually had windows and everything. And I remember going back to the pit, and you know, when you're a trader, like, crazy stuff happens, and you know, you just take it, and you're programmed to deal with insane amounts of stress. And you go through more emotions in a week than most people go in their lifetime. And you deal with it sometimes on a daily basis. You go from fear, greed, every human emotion when you trade. It's a wild kind of deal. So,
you're not a market maker. You're trading.
No, I was a market maker.
Your own account and your company.
Same thing. Same thing. I was a market maker running my own account.
But
the thing that stuck in my head the most that day was when the guy turned, as I went back into the pit, the lights went out, but people were still trading because you have positions on. So, I mean, you don't know what happened while the lights went out, what the boom was about. You know, it could be, who knows what it was about. Smoke was coming up the window. And we figured, oh, and that's the thing, you know, they're going to close next. So you had to get your positions squared away. And the guy who worked for this particular company turned around, looked at me, and goes, dude, that was a bomb. Get the F out of here. And I looked at him. I said, are you serious?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, dude, that was an effing bomb. Get the F out of here. And he was, and I knew he didn't mess around, because I traded with him every, I stood right in front of him for like maybe a year or two. I can't remember exactly how long. And when he told me that, I took him totally serious, man. I went right down the steps and right out the building. But the funny part is, when we came back to the floor, those guys were all gone. Never saw them again. And I knew a certain pack of them were actually FBI guys, and I just assumed he was part of them or not part of them. But it was pretty, like, you think back now, you go, well, why did they disappear after that happened? How come they still weren't there afterwards? You know, it's kind of a weird thing, weird way to look at it. But if you want to be a conspiracy theorist, you can say, well, they were there for the reason, because they wanted to see everything went right.
Yeah, maybe perhaps involved.
But they were actually there. Some of them were there for an investigation that I know about firsthand. So that's how you could build a conspiracy theory, because you knew someone could look it up and find out they were there, but they weren't there for that reason. But this one guy, one particular guy, was not there for the investigation. That's what I'm saying. He's the one that said, dude, that was a bomb. Get the F out of here. And it was a really big oil company that usually doesn't have a presence on the floor, and never did after that day.
And that bomb went off in Tower 1, was it? In the one of the sub-basements, right?
Yeah, one of the basements, and all the smoke came out. The lights went out, but nothing crazy happened. So then we go to 9/11, and it was my third son's first day of school. And I was like, well, I'm going to go to the other kid's first day of school, so I'm going to go to this kid's first day of school. He'd rather have the money, I bet, when he gets older. So I was going, I'm doing the two steps up to the Long Island Railroad because I can hear the bell ringing for the train, and missed the first train. The first train was the one that goes, I would have been out directly under and would have walked through at 8:45 when the North Tower got hit. It would have been perfect timing. I didn't make that train.
About the Pass Station in the deep.
No. Long Island Railroad.
Long Island Railroad. Okay.
Yeah. Long Island Railroad to the subway. The 1 and 2 train was underneath that, directly underneath the Trade Center. And you came up through the mall.
Okay. Yeah. I think the shallow.
Yeah. The one and nine or whatever. It was the 1 and 9. So anyway, I catch the next train, which got me in probably, I don't know what time it was. It had to be probably 10 to 9, something like that.
So this is after the North Tower was hit.
North Tower was already hit. So I kept, as the subway pulls up to Chambers Street and opens, actually it wasn't Chambers Street, it was the World Trade. I forget what the hell state. Imagine commuting for 20 years, you can't remember what the names are. I think that one was called Chambers on the one line. So anyhow, it doesn't matter. So the doors open, and people, instead of going up the stairs, were coming down the stairs. And it was kind of wild because they were, like, all whited out. It looked like Halloween. Like, they would look like ghosts. So they came pouring down the stairs for a second, and then they turn around, and people started going back up the stairs. So I'm like, dude, get me out of here. Just like, I've lived in New York my whole life. Whatever the story is, I'm going this way. So I walk up the stairs, and right up the stairs, right to the right, used to be a health food store where you'd go get a protein drink in the morning. That place was, blown out. It was not there. It were people running all over the place. And this is the very southern, the most southern end of the entire mall in the entire ground floor. Okay. So the tower is far away, I don't know how far away. It's a couple hundred yards, but at least 100 yards away. The elevator.
You're not far from Tower 2 there at the southern.
No, literally right next to Tower 2.
Yeah, so okay.
We're coming out of the basement. It's the whole mall area. But what I'm saying is people already, windows are blown out. People are running around all full of smoke, you know, all white and black and everything else. You could not walk the normal path to go over they had a little suspension bridge, very small, just a walkway to go over the West Side Highway. You couldn't go that way, so I had to go straight.
So your destination is the World Finance Center, the WFC, or not?
Actually, World Trade Center. It's right on the water, right where the waterway, ferry boats pick you up right there. Right where the Winter Garden, the Winter Garden was, they called it.
Yes.
Palm trees. Well, they had a marina there. So if you go to the northwest side of that right corner, there was one North End Avenue. That's where the new trade floor was built.
Okay, I see.
So I'm totally on the other side. I'm totally on the other side, on the south side. I forget what street that was. I don't know if it was Liberty or what that was.
Yeah, Liberty's a southern border street, I think. Yeah.
That was right across from 140, which got all burnt up. That place burnt up. And the Millennium was a little bit to the north and to.
Yeah, that's WCC3, right? Yeah, the hotel. Millennium is on the east side of the WCC, yeah.
Right. Well, trust me, this wasn't one of those things that you went around taking notes as this was going on. But you know what you knew. You know what you saw. I came out the south doors, and my wife called me exactly when I started walking through all the debris that was on the ground and told me a plane hit the Trade Center. So I was like, yeah, I can see that, because as I'm looking down, I can see these zinc-coated aluminum pieces laying everywhere, like chunks. There's a chunk, might be the size of a briefcase. There's some, you know, twisted aluminum. There's paper laying everywhere.
But is this after 9/03?
This is after the first, the North Tower
this
got
is after
hit.
The North Tower hit, and we're waiting on the South Tower
The
hit,
North right? Tower got hit. The whole entire mall was blown out for whatever reason, okay? That was gone. People were running around all white and black, getting out of the building. I go out of the south doors, the most southern doors there are in the whole mall plaza there. And I could see the debris because the north tower was hit from north to south. So everything blew out the south side. So it was all scattered all over Liberty Street, everywhere. I could see everything on the ground.
Well, and is then, some of it paper, as Rob described?
Yeah, it was tons of paper. There's so much file work and paperwork in those buildings. If you if you blew your nose, you could blow a desk out the window. I mean, you're talking mass. Everything is paper in those buildings, you know. So it came through, blows it out, paper everywhere. Saw a bunch of those airline bags that you towed around, which I thought were kind of weird. You're seeing some of them laying on the ground, and then I started seeing body parts on the ground and. They were pretty fragmented because they looked like you were walking through a meat market. It looked like
this is along Liberty Street, south of the South Tower.
Because whatever came through the North Tower got blown. If there were people in the planes or whatever the story was, whoever was in those buildings got blown out the backside. Follow? Like a gunshot.
Yeah.
So the gun hit the front. It's coming out the back. So everything was down on the ground. And you can see it. I can see thumbs, fingers, bones, like chunks of stuff, but nothing bigger than your fist. All small, no blood, all dried out. Looked like a meat market. You know, just like we'd seen a meat locker. There were a couple bodies on the ground that were uncovered. And it was basically describing those. It looked like somebody, it was like a water balloon. You know, when you drop a water balloon on the ground and you can't find the pieces? Well, people do the same thing when they hit the ground. You can't find the pieces. They just splatter. And,
there's a lot
and
of water in us.
We're like 90% water, 85% water. But what you see is something that looks like a gray coat laying on the ground, and that was what was left of them. And there was a few of them scattered as far down the west side.
And you saw a fair amount of luggage, you're saying, too.
Not a fair amount, a few. Like just something that
just
struck you as weird. A lot of people would wheel those things to work with their computers on them, you know? So you couldn't tell if they came from a plane or whatever. But I know what plane parts look like from going to Grumman when I was a kid on every school trip and my friend's dad working there. And I watched them build the A-10 Warthog. So I know what the inside of jets look like. And going to school for engineering, I mean, your brain just works that way. And every time you see a flap go up on an airline and you look in, it's all green because it's zinc plated. So the salt water can't destroy the aluminum. And that's what was on the ground. It was obvious. My wife saying, well, a plane hit. And I was looking at the stuff and I was like, dude, this is not a helicopter. This is a lot bigger. This is something bigger hit. And at that point, my phone went dead because you're talking thousands of people trying to get on, you know, back in those days, getting on the bandwidth, sucked up all the bandwidth and the phone went dead. So, I walked from there across the West Side Highway. There was a bunch of bodies laying right over that way. And I hadn't crossed the highway yet because curiosity killed the cat. Well, I'm one of them curious people. And I was just walking, looking around at this whole thing because nothing really bothers me because I've been through a lot of crazy stuff that I'm not going to explain. But I was just observing everything. And I'm literally standing right under the South Tower, probably right in the middle of Liberty Street. So we're talking... Those streets are very narrow. Those buildings are really tall. The streets are really narrow. And I remember the Trade Deli was a famous place we all used to get lunch all the time. The Trade Deli was directly across the street. So anyhow, I hear this noise, this roar, and it's like, you know, like a jet plane. It's loud as hell, just like a jet plane. And I look up, and I see this jet plane coming, and I'm thinking to myself, get the F out of here. And as soon as I start coming, my brain went immediately to some terror, some psycho attack. Is that what we're dealing with right here?
Hey, fascinating experience from Tommy Trainwreck. This is the Reynolds Reveal. Please rejoin us after the break.
By surprise, I was a slave. When I found out, yes,
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years' experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Hi, folks. Pete Santilli here. As a prominent social media personality on Facebook and Twitter since they were first launched, I participated in one-dimensional discussions with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. When I first set up my SecondLife.com account about a year ago, I entered a whole new magical world that brought my social media activity to life. Second Life is much more than just a 3D game or a social media platform. It'll bring your online persona to life in one of the most beautiful virtual reality simulators on the internet. It's free, and besides, it's the best way to listen to the Pete Santilli Show. You can interact with me live as I broadcast daily from the Overthrow Bunker studio. To get your free account, go to any one of our episodes and click on the Second Life banner. Once you're in, we'll give you the grant tour of our newly built Camfema, the very first educational tool of its kind anywhere in the world. For a limited time, if you sign up for a new SecondLife.com account, we'll give you a priceless welcome package. SecondLife.com. Join now, tune in, and connect with your friends at the Pete Santilli Show.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and yes, we do invite callers, 218-862-9829. Now, we were interviewing Tommy Trainwreck, and he is just to the point where there's going to be a plane crash into the South Tower. Tommy, pick it up from there.
Yep, so I'm basically standing right in the middle of the road. And one of the things I actually was looking at was all the shoes all over the ground. And I thought that was kind of wild because there's people that, you know, they estimate almost 50,000 people worked in the trade centers. And I think that was before 93, because after 93, everybody knew that they were going to take those down. And I can tell you firsthand that when, you know, as the board of the New York Mercantile Exchange was looking for a new place to go, and the Port Authority offered us the top three floors in one of those towers, we all said, dude, you're out of your fucking mind. They're going to take those down. We don't have anything to do with that place. And we get as far as away as we can. And that's how we built the building on the water, which was, you know, pretty good distance away, probably a quarter mile, I bet, all across the West Side Highway.
Anyhow,
When the jet was coming in on the South Tower, you know, I heard it roar. I watched it slam right into it, 85 stories above my head.
Now, when did
head.
You pick it up visually, Tommy? You heard the...
It was a pretty good distance. I would say, well, you know, those buildings are so tall, I would guess about a half mile away.
Okay. Maybe a little lower.
Because it was flying really low. And as it swept around, you know, South Manhattan, you can hear it. You can hear the roar, and you were looking like, what the hell is that? And then you looked up, and you saw the plane coming. And as it was coming, I realized, dude, that thing is going to slam right into the Trade Center. And it sure the hell did. It slammed right into the Trade Center. Now, one thing I could say that, you know how there's plenty of testimonies, proof, studies of eyewitnesses that think they saw one thing and it was actually something else, because in the minute they saw it, well, whatever happened. Well, when I saw it, I thought for sure it wasn't a 767. To me, it looked more like a DC-3. I thought they probably, you know, I thought they probably took some garbage planes and never
so
thinking
you,
for the
it
life of me.
You
that,
like a smaller passenger
it
line?
It was definitely a twin. Oh, it was absolutely a twin engine, but I thought it was something like a DC-3, like an old piece of crap deal. You know what I mean? But I couldn't see the sides. I just saw the bottom of it. So anyhow, it slammed in. And when it slammed in, there was a payloader across the street, and it had, you know, the orange cones around it because they were doing street work. And as soon as it hit it, I ran as fast as I could right across the street, jumped underneath the payloader, and a bunch of debris came flying down from that plane hitting. So that's how, you know, it was whatever hit it. But there was plenty of debris to come down to wake me up to the fact that something hit that building. So all of the debris comes raining down on the road again, but nothing crazy because that's where it entered the building. Okay, you follow?
Yeah.
The plane entered it from the south. So after that, I knew it was time to get out of Dodge because who knows what the hell was going on. So the safest place to be is at the water. So I basically went towards the exchange and got by the water. And as we got over there, now we can watch the North Tower burning and we can watch the South Tower burning. And I just sat there. And people from the building.
Hey, Tommy, did you see any detail at all? You're saying it two engine. And but it looks smaller than it's a wide body is a 767. You know, it's supposed to be United Airlines.
I would figure that the distance
did
I was.
Did it have a blue bottom, a dark blue? Do you notice any color?
I couldn't tell.
It
looked like it was old. It looked like it. The reason why I thought it was an old DC-3 because it reminded me of those American Airlines. Like to me, it looked like it was all silver or gray underneath. I don't remember seeing any gray.
Yeah, that's not the right livery for the United. The American plane went into the North Tower.
But what I always wondered afterwards is like, it was loud, but it wasn't like deaf. I've been in like a lot of airports and been under DC-3, been under eight, you know, Warthogs and 810s. And even though those are super quiet, they're plenty loud. And this thing being only 85 feet above my head when it hit, I didn't really think it was like any kind of deafening sound, and it just looked to me like it wasn't all that big.
Well, where do you get 85 feet? You know, if it went in at the 80th floor, you know,
eight times 10. So 10 stories of floor.
80th
right?
floor, 10, it's really 12 feet, but that's almost 1,000 feet in the air. You know, the towers are a quarter mile high. It's not that low.
It could have been a whole optical thing, you know, 800 feet above you, you know, something.
Yeah, but it looks closer when your life's on the line. Yeah.
But anyway, that wasn't important because the thing hit and it imploded, and the debris came flying. There was plenty of time to get away because it didn't take, you know, 2 seconds for it to hit the ground. But anyhow, we go back to the exchange there, and, you know, a bunch of people are coming out. And I had never gotten in the building. And apparently the floor wasn't even open. It was too early for that to have happened because the North Tower got hit at like 9 o'clock or something. So no one was there. And there was some people who already got out of there and went home. And there was a few people scraggling around. And at that point I realized, well, you're not getting out. Where are you going to go? The roads are closed. The bridges are closed. Everything's closed.
Well, straighten me out on what building you were trying to reach. Was it WFC building?
No, it was the building. No, it was 1 North End Avenue, which is right at the northwest side of the marina that's there. Right, right next to the American Express building.
Okay.
So you got the West Side Highway, the American Express building. I think Solomon Brothers is on the other side, and then you got 1 North End Avenue where the commodity exchange was. You couldn't get any further to the west. It was literally sitting on the river.
I gotcha.
Okay. It's like 20 foot of
water. Was on the
river. Yeah, it was right on the river. So that's why I went.
So what happens then? You realize it's not going to be a regular work day. Okay, no, so where?
I'm not getting home very fast. So what I decided to do is walk up to the west side to where the marinas are, rob a boat and go home. Because I figured it's no way you're going anywhere else. The phones don't work. You can't make a phone call. So as I was sitting there, the waterway boat was coming in. This is, I don't know what time that was, but I can tell you what was going on. The waterway boat's coming in. And as we're sitting there, we watched, you know, people jump. We watched it for, I don't know how long it was. Don't remember. And even pondered wondering whether there was enough fire there to take the Trade Center down. And we were just laughing. I said, dude, there's no way that thing's coming down. And it was mostly black smoke. It wasn't like burning white, red hot.
Right.
Stuff.
Everybody was amazed because, hey, whatever these blows were, they took it. They looked stable. You know, it's not going to, neither building is going
to
come
down.
Well,
not to bring up, I mean, it's like I'm trying to tell you the truth. And the truth is that I sat there and watched as long as I could. I literally watched people jump out of the buildings. It seemed like a long time, but I watched them jump. I heard them hit. And at that point, we were like, well, let's just get out of here.
What was the rate? Because there's a little controversy. It's hard to say.
Well, you have the South Tower.
How many of these jumpers really accumulated, didn't they?
Well, you had the South Tower. That's really hard to see from where I was, but the North Tower was pretty visible. That I had like two sides I could see really good, and I mean it was coming down. It was like raining people. Nothing. I don't know. I wouldn't say it happened every couple seconds.
No, but nope. Would you say 3 or 4 per minute or something like that number?
It was actually pretty long in between because you'd see people sitting there and sitting there and sitting there, and all of a sudden you see somebody jump. But we were hearing that the other side, the flat face north side of the North Tower, apparently there was a lot of people jumping there because, you know, of course, after this all happened, everybody on the floor had all kinds of stories. I lost 85 friends that day. So everybody had stories of what they saw when they left and hung around and watched things. I mean, people, you know, told stories. They watched this, you know, guy and a girl run, and the guy had his girlfriend by the hand, and a sheet of glass came and just chopped his arm right off. You know, I've heard that story, but that came right out. That wasn't something on YouTube. That was directly from someone on the floor who watched it happen. So, you know, then people watched people jump and hit the ground and blah, 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 blah. But anyhow, so what happened was, I heard the same sound as that jet sound, like that huge roar, just sound like, but there was no vibration. You know, there wasn't like your feet are vibrating or anything. It wasn't like a 93 when you went off the ground 3 inches. Okay. It was just sound. It was loud and it was roaring. And then you looked out and all you saw was this black, brown, white cloud starting to come at you. And that had been, that was the South Tower collapsing, but I didn't know it was the South Tower collapse because you couldn't really see it. You just heard the sound. You looked and you just saw white smoke coming. And it sounded exactly like another jet plane had smashed into the bottom of that. And I figured, well, they're just sending them in one after another now. So I was like, dude, let's get the hell out of here.
That's at 9:59.
So as we're starting to get out of there, the New York Waterway taxi, I'm literally sitting right by the entranceway to go down the ramp. And the people on the ferry are yelling, come on, come on, get on the boat. So I go running down the platform to get on the boat, and the boat won't come in. They're chickening out because they're scared to death. They see this smoke cloud coming, and I go, mother effers, I'm going to die right here. Look at this. These guys won't come in. Here comes the smoke. And I'm sitting there looking at the smoke in the ferry, figuring out what to do. It was too late to go run back the other way. So I actually had gone over the platform there and ready to jump in the water if it had been, you know, really hot. Because I didn't know what's coming.
So was it smoke or fine dust?
Well, it was smoke, dust, whatever you want to call it. It was white. It was literally like white, smoky dust. Anyhow, it comes and engulfs the whole platform. It wasn't hot at all. So you could barely see. And I do to this day, I still have problems with my eyes from getting all the glass shards and the asbestos and everything else that was in that crap, you know, in your eyes. And I still have the 9/11 cough every day. I cough for about an hour after that day because I had to walk. I had to run through all that. But I try to hold my breath and breathe through my shirt, but you still got it all in your eyes because you had to see along the ground. So you got up the staircase, back on the sidewalk. You had to find a crack, you know, one of the division lines in the sidewalk and follow it because you couldn't see past, you know, your fingertips. So you had to look down on the ground, watch your feet, and just start walking up the crack in the sidewalk until you get out of the dust, which wasn't really that big a deal. Maybe it was 40, 50 yards to get out.
What a show, the Reynolds Reveal. We've had testimony about 9/11 at the World Trade Center. And we're going to have a great show next week. I've got a great economist, Mark Thornton, on as my principal guest. So this is Morgan Reynolds. Thank you for listening, and I wish you would tune in again next week for another great Reynolds Reveal program.
Do you owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped to your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give them a call. It was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never drop the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
Would you like to see who's really hiding behind the green mask of the environmental movement? Are you ready for smart growth and sustainable living? Have you ever heard of Agenda 21? Well, Rosa Corey has, and she wrote a book about it. Agenda 21 is the United Nations blueprint for global domination, and they want to make you their slave. Have you ever wondered what smart growth really is and just how far the global elite will go to get what they want? Is Agenda 21 already at work in your neighborhood? The answer to all your questions can be found by going to thepetesantillishow.com and clicking on the Agenda 21 tab at the top of the page. Order your copy of Behind the Green Mask, You and Agenda 21 by Rosa Corey on Amazon.com, and you'll support the efforts of The Pete Santilli Show. Behind the Green Mask blows the lid off the New World Order's plan to rid the planet of everything unsustainable. Read the book and then ask yourself, are you sustainable?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette or e-cigarette consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir...
Well, you know, on a night like this, when it's all dark and scary, there's no reason to go hungry on the trail. That's why I like to pack myself a little bit of cheese turkey. Hot dog, this stuff is good. I prefer the chicken flavor. Well, it's low in fat and high in protein for those nights when you're sugaring on the trail. It's also good for the post-apocalypse. So that's why you ought to run on down and get yourself some cheese turkey. Yeah, want to find out more about cheese turkey? Just get on that feller Pete Santilli and he'll hook you up. Once again, don't forget, cheese turkey. Ooh, that's good meat.